Chapter 12. Seventh Claw. The street shivered under its tread. Dozens of windows facing the avenue shattered in their frames, and dust rained from the walls of broken buildings. The thunder of its splay-clawed feet wasn't even the loudest aspect of its presence. Louder still were the roaring whines of its great joints, great mechanical shrieks that split the air as it walked. And louder yet, the cacophonous bellow of its weaponized arms, burning the air when they sucked in power to fire, and illuminating the world around it with the light of blinding dawn as they released their fury. Adhemar of Seventh Claw crawled through the rubble of what had, moments before, been a habitation block. His vision flickered and hissed, all sense lost with the damage taken to his helm. Even his life readouts were scrambled, displaying nothing of use, nothing he could make out. With a curse, he tore the helm from his head, freeing his natural senses. The air was ash-thick and vibrating with the resonant booms of the Titan's stride. It was still some way down the avenue, bringing its guns to bear once more. 17 meters tall, almost as many wide, it hunched in the road, taking up so much of the street that its brutish shoulders made squealing tears in the buildings as it raked them with its bulk. The Astartes knew those armored shoulders shielded several crew members at work around the inner reactor, chanting their irritating prayers to the Emperor in his guise as the machine god. The fact he could not slay them, the fact he had nothing which he could even deal damage with, galled him almost beyond apoplexy. He glared at the canine head of the Titan, picturing the three pilots inside, leashed to their control thrones by hard wiring and restraint harnesses. How they must be laughing right now. Adhemar's throat and lungs tightened, filtering out the dust in the air as though it were a poison. Ignoring this biological reaction, the Night Lord dragged himself to his feet and ran behind the still-standing wall of a nearby building. The street, which had once been the main thoroughfare of a habitation sector, was a tumble-down wasteland in the wake of the Titan's anger. One of its weapons, like a gnarled right fist, was a multi-barreled monstrosity that hurled hundreds of bolt shells a second at its targets below. Every impacting shell chewed a meter-wide hole in the Warhound's steel and stone surroundings. With thousands of shells fired every minute, Adhemar wasn't surprised at the level of destruction. He was merely surprised he still drew breath. Most of his squad didn't share that fortune. An ugly chime rang out, reminiscent of a cracked bell calling the Imperial faithful to morning prayer. Adhemar's muscles locked solid as he remained where he was. It was the echolocation pulse of the Titan's Auspex. If he moved, it would know where he was. Hell, if it even sensed the minimal heat of his power armor, it would know. But he was counting on the Titan's systems being aligned to hunt larger prey. 50 meters down the road, shadowed from the moonlight by two towers that had escaped its opening wrath, it stood on its backwards jointed legs, wolfish cockpit head grinding left and right on servos that whined at agonizing volume. He heard the next attack before he saw it. The grunted cough of a missile launched nearby. From the second level of a ruined building, a streak of howling smoke slashed across the street. Adhemar moved to watch the missile's course, narrowing his eyes as his Astartes cognition instinctively took in the details of the warhead's angle and the certainty of its impact point. Denied his vox, he whispered to himself, "Mercutian, what are you doing?" The missile exploded in a fragmentary starburst against the Titan's faintly shimmering void shields. And the Warhound was already responding. The great left fist came up on roaring gears with punishing speed. Inferno gun. Adhemar was back in cover within a single heartbeat, not because he was in the line of fire, but because to look at the weapon firing would be to invite hours of blindness. Even with his eyes closed and head turned away, the son of Nostromo felt the brightness assault his retinas with jabs of migraine-colored pain. The massive gun fired with the challenging roar of a feral world predator, blasting searing air in all directions from its heat exchange veins. Adhemar exhaled a lungful of the burning air, feeling it scrape his throat. He knew without looking that the chemical wash of vicious liquid fire had flooded the building, dissolving everything within. The expected crash came moments later, as the building's structure withered under the superheated force of the assault. Was it his imagination, or had he heard a moment's cry from the vox of his helm in his hands? Had he heard one of his brother's death screams? Mercutian was undeniably dead. Brave, without a doubt, to think to harm the Titan with one of his last rockets. But the gesture was futile even before he took aim. Picking the god machine apart, once its layered shields were down, was one thing. Getting those shields down in the first place was quite another. Adhemar hooked his sundered helm onto the magnetic coupling of his belt and reached for his auxiliary vox within a thigh pouch. The earpiece felt alien. He was so used to the enclosing sensory magnification of his helm. He doubted there was anyone still with him, but it was worth the attempt.
Seventh Claw, status report.
Adhemar?
Mercutian.
Aye, Brother Sergeant.
How in the infinite hells are you still alive?
It was an effort not to raise his voice with incredulity.
You saw me take that missile shot?
And I thought I heard you die.
Not yet, sir. I made a tactical withdrawal at speed.
Adhemar resisted the urge to laugh.
So you ran?
Ran, and threw myself from the third story of that building's south-facing side. My arm is a mess, and I lost my launcher. Adhemar, we've got to get to the Rhino. The plasma gun is...
Not going to take down a Warhound Titan.
You have any better ideas?
A grinding chorus of immense gears started up down the avenue again. Adhemar risked another glance around the edge of the wall.
Bad news. Do you have visual?
I'm in the adjacent street, sir. I can't see the beast.
It's found the Rhino.
The Titan had indeed. It hunched every inch the feral predator, glaring down at Seventh Claw's troop transport nestled in a narrow alleyway. The collapse of the last building had revealed its dark armored hull. Rubble from the fallen hab block was scattered across its roof, leaving bursts of gunmetal gray where the blue paint was scraped away.
I have an idea, Adhemar voxed.
Adhemar, sir, with respect, we need to get out of here. There's no honor in this death.
Be silent. If we can get its shields down...
That's an impossible if. If we could fly or piss plasma, we'd have the job done too. None of those things will happen.
Wait, it's moving.
The howl of great gears intensified. Adhemar watched, whispering a prayer to the machine spirit of his Rhino, the faithful vehicle that had carried him across countless battlefields. He knew its interior as well as he knew his own armor. He could read the tank's temperament in the grunts of its idling engine and feel its arrogance in the clank and ding of every gunshot that sparked harmlessly from its hull. The Rhino's name in High Gothic was Carpe Noctem, Seize the Night. The tank that had carried Seventh Claw since the Legion's founding on pre-Imperial Terra died an ignoble death, expiring with a twisted, protracted groan of tortured metal. The Warhound Titan stood for half a minute, its splayed right foot claw grinding the tank into the street. The greatest injustice was that the tank had met its end in such an undignified manner, purely to spare the Titan's ammunition reserves.
You'll pay for that, Adhemar swore. You will bleed and scream and die for that.
The Titan finally raised its foot clear of the wreckage, scraps of bent metal falling from its taloned toes. In its wake, still in the behemoth's shadow, the crushed hull of Carpe Noctem looked especially pathetic. It was impossible to reconcile the image of miserable ruin with the great-hearted, indomitable tank that had raced him into battle 1,000 times and more. Seventh Claw was dead, heart and soul. Even if he and Mercutian somehow survived the next few minutes, they were destined to join one of the other claws in the ragtag remnants of 10th Company. Adamar watched the lumbering Titan stalk down the avenue, hunkering left and right, coming closer with each pounding tread.
Mercutian?
Aye, Brother Sergeant.
Not Brother Sergeant after this. Not a chance.
We need to find Rune and Hezjarn. They had melter bombs.
The warhound thundered past. Adamar froze, back pinned against the wall. A great shadow fell across him as the Titan blocked out the moon. It stood only 30 meters away, pistons hissing and venting air pressure, a beast breathing, sighing after a long hunt. Its back was to him now, as it stared down the avenue seeking targets. Another dull clang rang out as its echolocation Auspex sought returning signals of movement or heat. The wolf was sniffing for prey.
Repeat, sir.
Rune and Hezjarn, they had our melter bombs.
They're useless with the Titan shields up, you know that.
They're our only chance. We could mine the road ahead of it. Have you got anything better to be doing, or did you come here in midnight clad just to die with the others?
I've got Rune on my locator, sir, but not Hezjarn. Can you see him?
I can't see anyone's signals. My helm is damaged. I saw him fall when the Hab block came down on us. I know where to dig, but we'll need to be fast.
I've got no life signs from anyone except you and I,
Mercutian said. Not at all surprising, Adamar thought, watching the Titan panning left and right on its torso axis. The sound was like thunder in a valley.
It's facing away. There is a 16-second break between its Auspex signals. The scanner wave will pass over us within the first second or two. Move only 3 seconds after the damn thing clangs. Freeze the moment you hear it pulse.
Yes, sir.
They waited for several heartbeats until the dull ring chimed once more. More windows facing the street shattered under the reverberation. One, two, three, move! The transporter handled with weighty sluggishness compared to Blackened. Although the Thunderhawk variant was marked by a more skeletal midframe, it cradled the bulky shape of the squad's land raider in its underside hull claws. The weight counted. Septimus felt it in every bank and turn. Septimus brought the flyer lower, streaking over the tips of hab blocks, stabilizer thrusters burning hot. Go too low, and he risked entering the Titan's weapon range before they knew for sure where it was. Stay too high, and their Auspex wouldn't give an accurate return on where the enemy machine was.
I'm getting significant thermal flare at the end of a major avenue just north of here.
The voice of his master came over the vox. First Claw waited within their battle tank.
Pull in low. Release clamps at the other end of the avenue. If you get killed while causing the distraction, I'll lose my temper, Septimus.
He grinned.
Duly noted, Lord.
The transporter's stability engines burned hotter and angrier as they took the vessel's weight in full, all forward thrust lost, as it coasted lower to the ground, between the stunted remains of Titan-killed hab blocks. Engine wash blackened the street below. 600 meters or more down the avenue, the Titan saw them. The warhound reared around, back-jointed legs easing it into an awkward reverse turn. Its arms rose in lethal salute.
Imperial machine is acquiring target lock, Septimus voxed. 20, 15, 10 meters above ground.
Ave Dominus Nox,
Sirian said over the channel.
Hunt well, Septimus, Talos added.
Claws detached.
Freed of its burden, the Thunderhawk transporter bucked skyward, overcompensating engines roaring. Warning runes flashed across his console screens. Target lock. The surf wrenched the guidance sticks to pull the flyer into a vicious roll. From the avenue below, streams of massive caliber bolt shells sliced through his engine wake. He punched out at two levers either side of his control throne, and the protesting boosters cried out with fresh fury. The amount of thrust he was demanding from the transport was usually reserved for breaking back into orbit after a landing. To use it in atmospheric flight, to use in a cityscape. Septimus knew blackened. He knew the Thunderhawk could have taken this and more. He wasn't so sure about the transport. It juddered and creaked and whined all around him, complaining down to the rivets in its hull. Spires flashed by in a dizzying blur. Septimus climbed and brought the flyer into a sharp turn. As he lined up the nose with his target below, acquisition runes glimmered across his main data screen. The transport's missile launchers came alive, pods opening like unfurling flowers. I hope this works! The treads of First Claw's land raider had been in motion before it even hit the ground. They whirred and spun, chewing air, hungry to grind over the street's surface. First Claw! Came a voice over the tank's interior vox. Talos blink-clicked a tuning rune.
Adamar! Tell us, by the claws of our father, what are you doing here?
The land raider lurched as it crashed to the street, its cycling treads already tearing up the concrete at full speed. Sirion, at the tank's driving throne, turned the huge vehicle to the right, moving through a wide alley into a parallel side street. Within the tank's gloomy, red-lit insides, the rest of the squad checked their weapons.
Take a guess, Talos replied, and pounded his gauntlet against the door release.
Night swept in, temperature gauges on retinal displays falling as the chill wind hit their armor. Talos, Uzas, and Zal leapt from the moving tank, scattering into the ruined Hab Towers.
It's not the scenery, is it? Makutian's voice crackled. We'd have warned you away. We appreciate the effort, brothers, Adamar voxed, but even a land raider is scrap metal against the Warhound. We're honored you would join Seventh Claw in death. Silence, Talos barked. Where are you in relation to the Titan?
I could spit and hit it, Makutian replied. We're in its shadow, with melter bombs to mine the road.
Save them, the Prophet ordered.
First Claw, move up through adjacent streets to link with Seventh Claw. Sirion, bring Storm's Eye in fast, just as agreed.
There was no sense trying to hide the land raider. The Titan's Auspex would scent its heat and power source from a kilometer away.
You plan to take it down with your land raider? Makutian whistled low. A good death.
Enough of your negativity, Adamar snapped. Brother, tell me you've landed with a plan.
I landed with a plan, Talos said.
He ran through the rubble-strewn street, sighting the Warhound as it unleashed withering rivers of fire into the sky.
The Titan is about to become the victim of an unpleasant distraction. When we strike from the sky, follow my orders exactly. Compliance, Soul Hunter, Adamar said.
The Thunderhawk transporter was lightly armed compared to its troop-carrying gunship counterpart, but not entirely lacking in offensive capability. Wing-mounted heavy bolters made up the anti-troop complement of its weapons array, backed up by the capacity for 6 underwing Hellstrike missiles. Septimus had been flying the Thunderhawk blackened for years, and had performed strafing runs on enemy positions many times in the past. This attack run was marked by several uncomfortable differences to his usual participation in a battle. First among these was that the transporter lacked the main cannon armament of the more familiar Thunderhawk. Secondly, it could withstand significantly less damage on its hull midsections. Thirdly, as Septimus ran the flight path adjustments through his conscious thoughts, he reached an ugly conclusion. this bastard turns like it's underwater. The tank carrier dived, and dived hard, like a spear from the night sky cast at the cruelest angle. The Titan fired up at him. He could imagine its crew in their restraint thrones, unwilling to allow such a prize as an Astartes lander to escape its clutches, commanding their god machine to send its anger skyward in a relentless hail of bolt shells, thousands at once. The transporter jerked away from its dive, rolling so hard the pressure slammed Septimus painfully against his throne. The inertia of his attack run would, if he kept this up for much longer, either kill him, tear the ship apart, or both. But the lance of lethal shells slashed past. Altitude meters chimed in alarm. Velocity readouts did the same. The vessel itself was screaming at him. Septimus dragged at the control sticks, ramming the thrust levers a moment later. The transporter powered closer, its angle less insane. Septimus had held out as long as he could, not wanting to broadcast his intent, but the Titan crew had to know now. They would recognize this maneuver. Not a strafing run with the cannons, a bombing run. Talos crouched with Adamar in the ruined ground floor of the Hab block. With the walls almost completely leveled, they had an unopposed view of the street. Both warriors gripped plate-sized melter bombs in their hands, watching the Titan in the middle of the avenue as it fired into the sky. Adamar, older than Talos and showing it with his head bare, grinned toothily at the Prophet.
"If this works, it'll work."
Talos was almost smiling behind his own helm, glad that Adamar had survived the Titan's initial assault. Above, the transporter began its howling descent, racing closer by the second. The Titan locked its legs for support and opened fire with a fresh volley from its Vulcan megabolter. Septimus came in between the towers of Hab blocks, low now, even lower, low and close enough to graze the Titan's shoulders with heat wash when he passed overhead. When only 200 meters separated the knifing flyer and the firing Titan, as he heard dangerous clashes on the hull from shredding bolter fire, Septimus pulled back and climbed again. The Titan tracked its flight, but the ancient, time-honored joints couldn't keep pace with the speeding flyer as it nosed up into the final stage of its attack run. Septimus was holding to the thrust and altitude levers too tightly to risk letting go. The flyer was wounded, venting black smoke from several critical points, and he didn't dare take his hands from the controls for a moment. Leaning sideways in his throne, he cursed the fact this ship was made to be piloted by oversized, gene-forged Astartes instead of mortals. With an Ostraman invective, he kicked out at the clamp release console. The very second his targeting rune flashed green, 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 Septimus's boot heel smacked the lever up from secure to armed. Aimed downward like six separate blades, the missiles spat from their pods and fell, howling, from the sky. At this range, near suicidal as it was for the Thunderhawk, the Titan had no chance to intercept the missiles. The impact was a sight to behold. It burned into Talos's memory as fiercely as it burned into his eyes. The missile struck with savage force, hammering into the Titan's void shields with the force of a falling building. They exploded as one, and the flare momentarily blinded the one Night Lord that couldn't resist watching it all play out. Talos stared, seeing nothing until his eye lenses frantically cycled through filters to compensate for his blindness. Sight returned, blurred by smears of retinal pain, just in time for the Astartes to see the Warhound stagger back a step, its right leg moving back to support its tilting weight, clawed foot grinding into the ground. Its shield seemed fluid and malleable, swirling like oil on water, dissipating and sparking back to life as the internal generators strained to maintain the power feed to the void shield projector. Talos could almost see the tech adepts working around the central column of the Titan's juddering fusion reactor, like a spine running through its torso and beneath its dense shoulder armor. The Titan's shield crackled and flared with a sudden burst of dissipating energy. Deep within its armored body, a low and rising thrum built up, muted, but still audible to the Astartes in hiding. The Warhound's internal systems were bracing, feeding additional power to prevent a complete shield shutdown. Its voids were on the very edge of failure.
"Night Lords," Talos foxed, smiling his crooked smile. "Move in for the kill."
The machine spirit housed within the immense bulk of the 8th Legion Land Raider Storm's Eye had been honored time and again for its aggression. Scrolls and pennants marking dozens of glorious victories moved in the wind as they hung from its hull. On treads that had churned the earth of countless worlds, it powered from the side street, acting as much on its own bloodlust and instinct as it was obeying the suggestions from the Fleshmaster at the controls. Its prey was immense. Storm's Eye sensed the boiling heat of the Titan's plasma reactor, felt the fierce pressure of the giant's glare as it drew a target lock. Yet Storm's Eye, the soul of the machine, knew nothing of fear, nothing of retreat, nothing of cowing to intimidation. It tore into the avenue, treads crushing and grinding the rockcrete beneath its weight, flanking the towering foe. Storm's Eye clawed and spat at the larger predator. Its spitting venom was a withering hail of high-caliber bolt shells from its hull-mounted turret. Its talons, raking the enemy's flesh, were KZ-9.76 Godhammer pattern las cannons, each side turret unleashing eye-aching beams of merciless laser energy from two barrels slung side by side. It clawed and clawed and clawed, ripping at the prey's fragile shimmer skin, tearing at the half-seen protective shield. Something burst, the shimmer skin. Storm's Eye's talons had peeled the final layer of shimmer skin away, leaving the foe cold and exposed. The enemy staggered with violent kinetic feedback as something broke within its body. Storm's Eye heard the Fleshmasters shouting to one another. It sensed their blood excitement and shared their hunt hunger. The joining of battle hate pushed the tank's soul even harder. Its claws ached with death heat. The cooling touch of maintenance would be a blessed relief after this hunt. The prey was still strong, and it was still fast. The Fleshmaster guided Storm's Eye at hunt-kill speed across the avenue, reversing from the larger foe without ceasing fire. It was a battle to keep the tank's hull body away from the murder claws of the colossal predator. Like a shark seeking prey, Storm's Eye moved left and right in a weaving motion, engine heart burning hotter and hotter, claws tensing and hissing with the killing heat. The foe finally turned fast enough, no longer prey, no longer threatened. It roared its own reply at Storm's Eye, machine soul to machine soul, and with the wrath of a predator god, it clawed back. Talos vaulted another broken wall, sprinting across the avenue into the shadow of the firing Titan. With its Vulcan mega-bolter chattering a thunderstorm of shells at the Land Raider's retreating form, the enemy war machine had a greater threat to worry about than the Astartes at its feet. Still, it knew they were there. A clanging Auspex's return from the Titan sent warning runes flashing across Night Lord retinal displays. But even as the towering foe turned and sought to crush its weakling prey, the weakling prey was already acting. Talos was the first. Aurum crackled with energy in his fist before a single slash carved a malicious streak through the armor and engineering of the Titan's ankle. Even one-handed, the blow would have felled a tree or carved a mortal in half. Talos's own gene-enhanced strength, amplified tenfold by the artificial muscle fiber of his warplate, was the pinnacle of mankind's genetic manipulation, coupled with some of the machine cult's closest guarded secrets, rediscovered from the dark age of technology. The golden blade sliced and sank into the armor plating, biting deep into the mechanics beneath. This alone was nothing. A pinprick of a wound caused in a heartbeat span. Talos snarled with effort. his muscles unused to being so tested, as he wrenched the blade deeper, impaling and sawing through the cables and rods and pistons that served the Titanus tendons. Machine blood spat from the carved metal, sheeting Talos with discolored lubricant and oil. Its next Auspex pulse sounded like a wail. With a replying cry of exultant anger, Talos slammed his other hand against the jagged wound he'd carved. There was a hollow clunk as the melter bomb adhered fast. Adamar and Zal were next, clamping their own explosives to the wound's edges. Talos was already sprinting to safety as Mercutian slammed his incendiary home. He sighted Uzas. Uzas, who was not laying his explosives with the rest. Uzas, who stood under the towering, stamping Titan and fired his bolter up at the war machine's chin. Did he think small arms fire was ever going to puncture a hole in the armor of a Titan? Did he think the crew within that head cockpit felt his gunfire as anything more than a whispered irritant against the hull skin of their walking sanctum? Zal's voice barked over the vox, caught between anger and disbelief. "What's that damn fool doing?" Talos didn't answer. He was already running back. Sirion's influence made it all the more difficult. Sight-stealing brightness flashed in colorful blurs across Talos's eyes, as the land raider down the avenue maintained heavy fire with its god hammers. Talos closed his useless eyes, running blind between the Titan's crushing legs, relying on his other senses to guide him. Beneath the pounding stamp of the enraged Titan's tread, beneath the mocking, deafening, waspish buzz of constant las cannon fire, there, the thrum of power armor, the heavy chatter of a bolter like an impish giggle in the wake of the super-heavy weapons at play. Most identifiable of all was Uzas's gleeful voice, risen in the howling of names Talos had no wish to know. Names which cast him back, just for a moment, to his vision of Abaddon's allies. He threw himself at the sounds, shoulder-charging Uzas 10 meters across the street with the dull crash of ceramite armor plates, clashing hard. Still blind, he ran to his brother's rising body and powered his fist into Uzas's helmed face. Once, twice, a third time, and a fourth. With a weak growl, Uzas staggered on shaking legs. Talos head-butted him, the Nostraman rune on his forehead shattering one of Uzas's red eye lenses. Feeling his brother go limp, the prophet hooked his fingers in Uzas's armored collar and dragged the fool into the relative cover of a half-fallen hat block. He looked up to see his death. The Titan's arm, the one not releasing a torrent of murder down the avenue at Sirion and Storm's eye, aimed directly down at him. The arm itself was longer than a battle tank, sucking in light and heat through side veins as it amassed the power to fire. An inferno gun. It would liquidate him. Uzas, the stone of the building, the concrete of the street, in a wash of sunfire. One thought burned through his mind as Talos stared up at the trembling cannon. "This is not how I will die." The explosives bolted to the Titan's ankle detonated, as if the prophet's silent words shaped fate itself. Princeps Argeron Hollison grunted a weak murmur, because it was the only sound he could make. Something was crushing his chest, blocking all attempts to breathe, and pressing him back against his throne. The pressure that forced him hard against his throne made the hard-wiring needles and probes socketed to his spine and skull push far deeper than they should, effectively impaling him. He could feel the dim, pulsing throb of internal bleeding in his head and chest as his vision swam, and no, it was the Titan's pain, still linked to the enraged, crippled form of Hunter in the Grey. The Princeps was drowning in the God Machine's overwhelming pain, and its overwhelming indignity. It had fallen, not in glorious battle, not in war against a stronger foe. The Titan, Warhound class, assembled in the hallowed and sacred forge factories of Alaris II, noble and knighted Mechanicus world, had fallen. stumbled, crashed to the ground, now prone to the ant-like bites of lesser prey. The cooling reactor core of the humbled giant bled helpless rage into Argeron's mind. Just as the Titan lay prone, so too was he defenseless against its maddening anger. He couldn't move his head to unplug himself. Rage flooded him, terrifying in its intensity and inhumanity, rendered worse by the very fact it could not be escaped. The twisted metal crushing him, the pilot throne of his faithful Moderati Primus Ganelon, was unmovable. His hands beat weakly, worthlessly against the restraining weight. He became aware that not only was he crushed, but that he was at an angle. His right arm and leg, as well as the right side of his head, were numb with dull pain from being forced against the metal wall of the cockpit. Hunter in the Grey had twisted as it fell, coming down on its side. Argeron had a fragmentary burst of short-term memory. The pain in his left fist, as the Inferno gun streamed killing fire into the sky, a useless release as the Titan toppled. Then the thunderous crash, then blackness, then pain, now the rage. Argeron was shivering and drooling, half senseless from the fury of his fallen Titan, when the roof of the wolf-headed cockpit was torn away. Not that he was aware of it, but his body was spasming every few seconds with violent jerks, banging his cracked skull and broken leg against the wall. The Titan's mortis cry, an ululating wave of channeled hatred, was slowly killing the one crew member still alive. But then, Hunter in the Grey had always been a willful and vindictive engine. Argeron gasped and wept as a dark figure dragged him from the throne. He gasped in relief, wept in thanks, as the plugs and cables snaked from his skull and spine. Even now, deprived of the invulnerable shell of his hunter, he could not care that he had traded one death for another. Blessed succor from the dying Titan's poisonous emotion. That was all that mattered. Held limply in the gauntlets of the enemy, Princeps Argeron Hollison, born of the dynast clans ruling the Legio Maledictus of Cryth Primus, once the commander of one of his homeworld's precious god machines, stared into the emotionless red eyes of his captor.
"My name is Talos," the dark warrior growled, "and you are coming with me."